Chapter 83. The principal difference between a cat and a lie is that the cat has only 9 lives. Pudd'nhead Wilson's New Calendar. April 20. The cyclone of 1892 killed and crippled hundreds of people. It was accompanied by a deluge of rain, which drowned Port Louis and produced a water famine. Quite true, for it burst the reservoir and the water pipes. And for a time after the flood had disappeared, there was much distress from want of water. This is the only place in the world where no breed of matches can stand the damp. Only one match in 16 will light. The roads are hard and smooth. Some of the compounds are spacious, some of the bungalows commodious, and the roadways are walled by tall bamboo hedges, trim and green and beautiful. And there are azalea hedges too, both the white and the red. I never saw that before. As to healthiness, I translate from today's April 20, Merchants and Planters Gazette, from the article of a regular contributor, Carmench, concerning the death of the nephew of a prominent citizen. Ad and lugubrious existence, this which we lead in Mauritius. I believe there is no other country in the world where one dies more easily than among us. The least indisposition becomes a mortal malady. A simple headache develops into meningitis, a cold into pneumonia, and presently, when we are least expecting it, death is a guest in our home. This daily paper has a meteorological report which tells you what the weather was day before yesterday. One is clever pestered by a beggar or a peddler in this town, so far as I can see. This is pleasantly different from India. April 22. To such as believe that the quaint product called French civilization would be an improvement upon the civilization of New Guinea and the like, the snatching of Madagascar and the laying on of French civilization there will be fully justified. But why did the English allow the French to have Madagascar? Did she respect a theft of a couple of centuries ago? Dear me, robbery by European nations of each other's territories has never been a sin, is not a sin today. To the several cabinets, the several political establishments of the world are clotheslines, and a large part of the official duty of these cabinets is to keep an eye on each other's wash and grab what they can of it as opportunity offers. All the territorial possessions of all the political establishments in the earth, including America, of course, consist of pilferings from other people's wash. No tribe, howsoever insignificant, and no nation, howsoever mighty, occupies a foot of land that was not stolen. When the English, the French, and the Spaniards reached America, the Indian tribes had been raiding each other's territorial clotheslines for ages, and every acre of ground in the continent had been stolen and re-stolen 500 times. The English, the French, and the Spaniards went to work and stole it all over again, and when that was satisfactorily accomplished, they went diligently to work and stole it from each other. In Europe and Asia and Africa, every acre of ground has been stolen several millions of times. A crime persevered in 1,000 centuries ceases to be a crime and becomes a virtue. This is the law of custom, and custom supersedes all other forms of law. Christian governments are as frank today, as open and above board, in discussing projects for raiding each other's clotheslines as ever they were before the Golden Rule came smiling into this inhospitable world, and couldn't get a night's lodging anywhere. In 150 years England has beneficently retired garment after garment from the Indian lines, until there is hardly a rag of the original wash left dangling anywhere. In 800 years an obscure tribe of Muscovite savages has risen to the dazzling position of land robber and dash chief. She found a quarter of the world hanging out to dry on 100 parallels of latitude, and she scooped in the whole wash. She keeps a sharp eye on a multitude of little lines that stretch along the northern boundaries of India, and every now and then she snatches a hip rag or a pair of pajamas. It is England's prospective property, and Russia knows it, but Russia cares nothing for that. In fact, in our day land robbery, claimed jumping has become a European governmental frenzy. Some have been hard-added in the borders of China, in Burma, in Siam, and the islands of the sea, and all have been added in Africa. Africa has been as coolly divided up and portioned out among the gang as if they had bought it and paid for it. And now straightway they are beginning the old game again to steal each other's grabbings. Germany found a vast slice of Central Africa with the English flag, and the English missionary and the English trader scattered all over it, but with certain formalities, neglected, no signs up, keep off the grass, comma, trespassers forbidden, etc. And she stepped in with a cold, calm smile and put up the signs herself, and swept those English pioneers promptly out of the country. There is a tremendous point there. It can be put into the form of a maxim. Get your formalities right, never mind about the moralities. It was an impudent thing, but England had to put up with it. Now, in the case of Madagascar, the formalities had originally been observed, but by neglect they had fallen into desuetude ages ago. England should have snatched Madagascar from the French clothesline. Without an effort she could have saved those harmless natives from the calamity of French civilization, and she did not do it. Now it is too late. The signs of the times show plainly enough what is going to happen. All the savage lands in the world are going to be brought under subjection to the Christian governments of Europe. I am not sorry, but glad. This coming fate might have been a calamity to those savage peoples 200 years ago, but now it will in some cases be a benefaction. The sooner the seizure is consummated, the better for the savages. The dreary and dragging ages of bloodshed and disorder and oppression will give place to peace and order and the reign of law. When one considers what India was under her Hindu and Mohammedan rulers, and what she is now, when he remembers the miseries of her millions then, and the protections and humanities which they enjoy now, he must concede that the most fortunate thing that has ever befallen that empire was the establishment of British supremacy there. The savage lands of the world are to pass to alien possession, their peoples to the mercies of alien rulers. Let us hope and believe that they will all benefit by the change. April 23. The first year they gather shells, the second year they gather shells and drink, the third year they do not gather shells. Said of immigrants to Mauritius. Population 375,000. 120 sugar factories. Population 1851, 185,000. The increase is due mainly to the introduction of Indian coolies. They now apparently form the great majority of the population. They are admirable breeders. Their homes are always hazy with children. Great savers of money. A British officer told me that in India he paid his servant 10 rupees a month, and he had 11 cousins, uncles, parents, etc., dependent upon him, and he supported them on his wages. These thrifty coolies are said to be acquiring land a trifle at a time, and cultivating it, and may own the island by and by. The Indian women do very hard labor for wages of 1-2 rupee for 12 hours work. They carry mats of sugar on their heads, 70 pounds, all day lading ships, for half a rupee, and work at gardening all day for less. The Cameron is a freshwater creature like a crayfish. It is regarded here as the world's chiefest delicacy and certainly it is good. Guards patrol the streams to prevent poaching it. A fine of Rs. 200 or 300, they say, for poaching. Bait is thrown in the water. The Cameron goes for it, the fisher drops his loop in, and works it around and about the Cameron he has selected, till he gets it over its tail, then there's a jerk or something to certify the Cameron that it is his turn now, he suddenly backs away, which moves the loop still further up his person, and draws it taut, and his days are ended. Another dish, called palmist, is like raw turnip shavings and tastes like green almonds. Is very delicate and good. Costs the life of a palm tree 12 to 20 years old for it is the pith. Another dish looks like greens or a tangle of fine seaweed is a preparation of the deadly nightshade. Good enough. The monkeys live in the dense forests on the flanks of the Toy Mountains, and they flock down nights and raid the sugar fields. Also on other estates they come down, and destroy a sort of bean crop just for fun, apparently tear off the pods, and throw them down. The cyclone of 1892 tore down two great blocks of stone buildings in the center of Port Louis, the chief architectural feature, and left the uncomely, and apparently frail blocks standing. Everywhere in its track it annihilated houses, tore off roofs, destroyed trees and crops. The men were in the towns, the women and children at home in the country getting crippled, killed, frightened to insanity. And the rain deluging them, the wind howling, the thunder crashing, the lightning glaring. This for an hour or so. Then a lowland sunshine. Many ventured out of safe shelter. Then suddenly here it came again from the opposite point and renewed, and completed the devastation. It is said the Chinese fed the sufferers for days on free rice. Whole streets in Port Louis were laid flat wrecked. During a minute and a half the wind blew 123 miles an hour, no official record made after that, when it may have reached 150. It cut down an obelisk. It carried an American ship into the woods, after breaking the chains of two anchors. They now use 4-2 forward, 2 astern. Common report says it killed 1,200 in Port Louis alone, in half an hour. Then came the lull of the Central Calm. People did not know the barometer was still going down. Then suddenly all perdition broke loose again, while people were rushing around seeking friends and rescuing the wounded. The noise was comparable to nothing, there is nothing resembling it, but thunder and cannon, and these are feeble in comparison. What there is of Mauritius is beautiful. You have undulating wide expanses of sugar cane, a fine, fresh green and very pleasant to the eye, and everywhere else you have a ragged luxuriance of tropic vegetation of vivid greens of varying shades, a wild tangle of underbrush, with graceful tall palms lifting their crippled plumes high above it, and you have stretches of shady dense forest with limpid streams frolicking through them. Continually glimpsed and lost and glimpsed again in the pleasantest hide-and-seek fashion, and you have some tiny mountains, some quaint and picturesque groups of toy peaks, and a dainty little vest pocket Matterhorn, and here and there and now, and then a strip of sea with a white ruffle of surf breaks into the view. That is Mauritius, and pretty enough. The details are few, the mass result is charming, but not imposing. Not riotous, not exciting, it is a Sunday landscape. Perspective, and the enchantments wrought by distance, are wanting. There are no distances, there is no perspective, so to speak. 15 miles as the crow flies is the usual limit of vision. Mauritius is a garden and a park combined. It affects one's emotions as parks and gardens affect them. The surfaces of one's spiritual deeps are pleasantly played upon, the deeps themselves are not reached, not stirred. Spaciousness, remote altitudes, the sense of mystery which haunts apparently inaccessible mountain domes and summits reposing in the sky, these are the things which exalt the spirit, and move it to see visions and dream dreams. The Sandwich Islands remain my ideal of the perfect thing in the matter of tropical islands. I would add another story to Mauna Loa 16,000 feet if I could, and make it particularly bold and steep and craggy and forbidding and snowy, and I would make the volcano spout its lava floods out of its summit instead of its sides. But aside from these non-dash essentials I have no corrections to suggest. I hope these will be attended to. I do not wish to have to speak of it again. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.